This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hey, it's Mark Schler with the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. The NFL season is in full swing, and I'll be here to break down all the action like no one else can. Follow and listen to the Stinkin' Truth Podcast on your free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Spiegel and Holmes Show Flashback.
And I'm going to tell you a little story, okay?
Okay.
So when I leave the Bears, when they hired Dick Geron, but I remember Curtis Conway, my first draft pick, Seaway, my guy.
Chicago Bears select Curtis Conway, wide receiver, University of Southern California.
He broke bad on you, Coach. He comes out and says, the handcuffs are off. I'm finally going to get some passing. So, okay, the handcuffs are off. Fast forward. Now I'm the head coach of the Dolphins.
Gabe was the right man for the job.
He leaves the Bears and goes to the Chargers. And we're going to play the Chargers in San Diego.
Hello, everybody. I'm Gus Johnson along with my partner, Brent Jones. And the Miami Dolphins have been playing some solid football. Dave Wannstedt, first year as the head coach in Miami.
So I'm looking this depth chart over, and I'm talking to the team in my two corners.
Sam Madison and Patrick Surtain provide blanket coverage on the corners.
So I call these guys in.
Dave Wannstedt had an interesting message for his team this week.
He sure did. I said, hey, you see this scouting report right here? You see this number 80? I says, I don't care if every play you run him into the Gatorade table on the sideline. I don't care about the penalties. I don't want this guy catching a pass.
Curtis Conway is going to have to start living up to his billing. He's going to have to start making some plays. Hasn't really lived up to the expectations.
Curtis Conway is the intended receiver. Sam Madison prevents him. Moreno pumps down the sideline. Intercepted again. Sam Madison.
And the names that we haven't really called for the San Diego offense, Jeff Graham, Curtis Conway.
Moreno bailing out of pocket. Almost picked off again, intended for Curtis Conway. And number 23, Patrick Surtain, had some hands on the football. Defense for the Dolphins.
Well, they have been tough and really resemble their coach. Just very tough, very businesslike.
Intercepted. Patrick Surtain. Fourth interception of the day.
He caught two passes for like 15 yards or something like that.
They came out very aggressive, Dave Wannstedt's team.
We win the game, and after the game, I'm walking over to see their head coach.
Dave Wannstedt looks for Mike Riley.
I hadn't talked to Curtis since I left, okay? And I see him coming up to the side. You know, we won the game. I'm feeling damn good. Hey, Curtis, what's going on? And he gives me a big hug, so we're hugging at midfield, and he whispers in my ear, Coach, you got to get me down there with you at Miami.
See, I thought you were going to say to him, we put the handcuffs on you.
Oh, yeah, I should. To this day, when I would see him in L.A., we always brought that up and laughed about it.
Oh, is that awesome.
What a story.
It was a great story.
Form is something tall and strong. Make it a hurricane before I go insane. It's only 12:30, but I don't care.
He don't care.
I don't care. It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
Yes, it is. And that means that we get our weekly chat with Dave Wannstedt.
Have a cocktail, everyone. Coach is here.
It's 5 o'clock. Oh, is my, what are we doing here, Shane? This thing keeps, there we go. Okay.
There you go.
How is it automatically my fault?
Well, because you're the boss here.
You
you're
sit there twice a week.
Okay.
Take some ownership. Point a thumb.
Yeah, it's 5 o'clock right here.
Did you hear all those highlights from that game there, Coach?
That was a story. I didn't want to waste too much airtime on it. It was a nice story, absolutely.
It was a great story.
That's a lot of them, absolutely.
Tanny had he went back and he watched the whole game. And
he must have. That was
Tanny, you heard something in that game that you thought
was
interesting.
Wanted to ask Coach.
Yeah, so you know the guys were talking about in your production meeting going up into that game, Gus Johnson and Brent Jones, they said that you told them that in Miami, you wanted to do a better job of being around the players, being in the locker room than you did when you were head coach at the Bears. What did they mean by that, and what made you have that realization that you needed to be better in that area of being a head coach?
Well, you know, if you want to improve. Obviously, you learn from mistakes. And I just felt like there were times at Chicago that I was a little too, I mean, I was always businesslike. You know, I was always upset at everything about everybody. But it seemed that way. I really wasn't. But no, I just thought that, I wanted to just have a little better relationship with the players. That's all it was. So I made a point that before every practice started, I would walk through the locker room on my way to the practice field. You know, I wasn't going to just run out there and be meeting them on the field or anything. So I left my office a few minutes early, and I would walk through the players' locker room. And there was always something going on with somebody, you know. So I really made a point to connect that way. And I think, you know, it was good. To this day, you know, I talked to Zach Thomas not long. I mean, I talked to all those guys all the time. They were all good. I was just talking with Jay Fiedler, our quarterback, last week. What was I talking? Oh, something was going on at Dartmouth where he went to college, and I texted him and we talked. So, yeah, it's the relationships are important. They are different in the NFL. It is a business. You're talking to men, but I thought that was important and something that I could get better at.
That's really cool because we're talking about some of these possible Bears head coaching candidates, you know? Mm-hmm. And one of the guys we've been talking about is Brian Flores, who's a fascinating guy and, of course, the Vikings defensive coordinator. But he had a bumpy go-round with Tua Tagovailoa, obviously, in Miami. And you'd be wanting to know if he could reflect and be a little softer or be a little bit more human maybe with Caleb Williams, you know? Like, could a guy like Brian Flores learn from one job to the next?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, there's no question about it. I was just 40 when I took the Bears job, you know? I mean, so there is a trial and, you know, to go through, trial and error. I mean, at any job, in anything in life, and the smart people learn from it. You know, I mean, if you're ignorant, you stick your head in the sand and say, no, I've got all the answers. But it worked out pretty good at Miami, too. 10.5 wins a year for 4 years. It's not bad, you know.
Better go around there.
Yeah, just a little bit.
What was it like for you watching that game on Sunday?
Wow. It was disappointing to me because offensively, in the first 9 plays, we had 6 passes and 3 runs. That disappointed me right off the bat. I really thought that you come out and Thomas Brown would establish the run, get the jitters off of everybody, get the jitters off himself, try to get everybody, you know, with a new role, new position, new coaches doing a little bit different things. Let's get everybody in the groove. And the simplest way to do that is hit these guys in the mouth, set the tempo a little bit, and here we go. And it didn't do that. And it also told me that, you know, I was so excited a few weeks ago when we started running the ball as much as throwing the ball. And I went back to the story that we talked about here. We got to what can our offensive line do? We got to do what they can do to be successful and then go to the quarterback and the receivers and so forth. You can't start with what you want to do with the quarterback and then work down to the line. It doesn't work that way. And I thought that everybody had learned those lessons and we went through that. Well, we didn't, obviously. And then on the other side of the ball, guys, football, basic football now, you know, and I love Eric Washington, but that was a major disappointment. You know, when a team, San Francisco shifts and motions more than anybody in the National Football League. You know that going in. You watch them on tape. The thing you want to do, why are they shifting in motion? Because they're trying to confuse you, right? They're trying to get miscommunication between players and put themselves at an advantage. So what do you got to do defensively? You have to line up and you have to keep it. I don't want to use the word simple, but you want to make sure that you give your players a chance to play fast. And less is more when you're facing a team like that. And what do? We come out in the first 16 plays and blitz them 5 times. I don't know where the hell that came from. And we're giving up 30-yard balls and guys are running free. I mean, it was disappointing.
Coach, we heard from Shanahan and some of the players on the 49ers where they said, look, we knew that we could kind of take advantage of the Bears linebackers in play action because they're such a run-heavy team, which I think is – there's a lesson in there too. But they knew that the Bears linebackers would react –
to the run game. And so seeing Kittle being able to get behind them because they're biting up. So I want to know, you coach linebackers, you coach defenses. What's the coaching tool when you know a team is going to try to sucker you into play action? What do you tell your defenders?
Well, number one, they were playing their third team running back. Okay, it wasn't Christian McCaffrey. It wasn't the backup kid. I can't remember his name. They were on their third team running back. So we're not facing Derrick Henry. Okay, let's start with that.
Fourth running back, in fact.
Was it the fourth running back? Thank you, Spiggs. So the fourth running back. So that even – and then number two, now you can say what you want about play action pass. It was part of it, but the first one they had, they motioned Kittle from the – offensive left to the offensive right. We're going to fire. We blitz Gordon from that side. Well, I can show you the tape because I drew it up about six times. on the so Kittle, he shifts over, and now he's to the side where Edwards and Edmonds in the middle. They're both having communication issues. Like, okay, we shifted over, and on the snap of the ball, the area where Gordon blitzes, both linebackers are dropping the opposite way. They didn't need – and Kittle runs to that open zone, catches it, and goes 35 yards down the field. The next play, okay, they shift Kittle over. They line up like he's going to block. They snap the ball. Kittle hits like he's going to chip. The two offensive linemen block for a second. He releases – the lineman release, it's a tight end screen.
Beautiful, across the middle of the field.
Coach, what are we talking? I mean, that's, you don't get full, I mean, you know, he might catch the ball on that, but it turned into be a 25 or 30-yard play. So I don't buy that. I mean, yeah, what is it? It was off play action pass, but not for 30 yards. Coach, not nine plays over 20 yards.
You told us they were going to miss Matt Eberflus as a defensive game planner.
Absolutely.
And a defensive adjuster. And it's obvious that they did. When we talked to Jalen on Monday, he referenced, just kind of off the cuff, yeah, you know, it's probably a whole new staff coming in. Like, you think this is a whole new staff coming in, right? I mean, because, like, the backup coordinators got absolutely destroyed. Kyle Shanahan's good, but they got absolutely destroyed.
Yeah, against the team. And two things where I was excited about, and I'm really – that loss bothered me for a couple reasons. I bet on them, okay? I picked them to win, okay? Because –
I'm right there with you, by the way, right there with
yeah,
you.
Yeah, because, one –
were dope.
The best players on their team were hurt.
Yeah.
Okay. There was no left tackle. You know, Trent Williams is out. Bose is out on the other side. Yeah. McCaffrey's out, on and on and on and on. Okay. And then the second thing, I really thought leading all the way up, hearing the same comments as you and all the listeners out there, that we had great practices and they were energized and they were fired up. So I said, we're going to get a little surge here. We're going to get a bump because we got a new staff. We got a new energy. We got a new voice. And
I'm not sure they know what a great practice is.
I don't know. I was told that this week, a little birdie told me that the Vikings went in full pads on Monday and we were off on Monday. So I don't know what that's going to mean come next Monday, but that was the difference.
But they did a walkthrough today, too.
Yeah, well,
Bears just did a walkthrough today. Did you do a walkthrough yesterday?
Yeah, I think it was shorts and shells both days.
So
yeah.
Shorts and shells both days, fully off on Monday.
I was told the Vikings practiced in full pads on Monday. I have to confirm that.
Maybe they'll step it up tomorrow.
Yeah.
Maybe the Bears will step it up, have a nice little crackling padded practice on Friday.
Coach, I'm worried about the effort these last four games.
Well,
you worried about it?
No, I don't. We got high character guys. But there's such a fine line between playing for your job and playing to put food on the table and just going out there and playing. You know, the game of football, if you are not all in emotionally, you know, and mentally, it's a physical, emotional game. You've got to be all in both those categories in order to play at the highest level that you need to play at. And, If the Bears aren't, and if they weren't, obviously last week, it's gonna be tough. You don't get ready for a game the night before. I promise you that.
Dave wants that on Spiegel and Holmes.
A man who would know about all of those things, joins us now. Hall of Famer, Super Bowl MVP, Walter Payton Man of the Year. Broadcaster is going to be having the Bears game on Monday Night Football with his partner, Buck. It's Troy Aikman joining us here on the Spiegel and Holmes Show with Dave Wonstead. Troy, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, Troy.
Hey, you bet.
Troy, how you doing, man? You know what?
I'm doing great.
I'm going to start off. You know, we have this show at 5, so I have a little cocktail, okay? And I'm having a beer, and I'm not going to tell you what kind it is, but it's not 8. So we're going to get a little 8 beer up here and try. I know you don't sell it in Chicago, but we're going to promote the hell out of it for you, okay?
Yeah, there you go. We'll be in Chicago eventually, so that's all good.
Good. Hey, let me ask you a question. We appreciate you jumping on here for a few minutes. Yeah. The big story, obviously, up here, and it, rightfully so, is Caleb Williams. And, how is where he's at now? How is his progress being, is he progressing the right way, and are they using him the right way? From what you've seen, what's your thoughts on Caleb at this point in the game?
Yeah, it's a fair question, and I think that, as you know, that everybody wants to, from one week to the next, wants to be able to say, yeah, there was progress made. No, there's not progress. What are we going to do? And you're just in a fishbowl, and there's opinions each and every week based on whatever happened in the previous game. And I'll tell you, from what I see, I see a really talented quarterback still. I still believe in him. And the fact I'm even saying that sounds crazy, because we're all so quick to judge whether these guys are franchise quarterbacks or not. But a lot of the things, we had the Bears going back in the preseason, and I really expected then, I said it during the broadcast, I thought that a lot of things were in place for Caleb Williams to have a great deal of success as a rookie. And there have been more and more rookies have success in this league. We saw it last year, of course, with C.J. Stroud. We've seen it this year with Jaden Daniels and, Bo Nix and some others. But the defense hasn't played, certainly here as of late, hasn't played as well as what I expected them to. I thought they would continue to run the ball better like they did a year ago. That hasn't happened. I see where the offensive line, a lot of questions about them. I think overall, they're not a great offensive line, but I think they're serviceable. It just has not come together the way that they would like. But I like him. There's some things that he's got to improve upon, which I think he will. But here's what I think. These quarterbacks, whether it's Caleb or anyone else, they come into the league, they've played in these 7-on-7 leagues. They've played in these offenses in college where they're just in shotgun formation, throwing the ball all over the place. And there is more to playing quarterback than just simply being able to throw a football. And a big part of it is knowing game situations. And I think when I watch Caleb, more inclined to take a sack than he is to try to get a ball into a tight window. And I think a lot of that is because quarterbacks ultimately aren't – the statistic of a sack usually falls on the offensive line as opposed to the quarterback rating or some negative statistic that is associated with the quarterback. And there are certain situations in games you just can't simply take sacks, and you have to be aware of what the down and distance is and what's required, how's your defense playing. There's more to quarterback than just simply having physical abilities and being able to throw a ball. And I think all of that is things that he'll continue to improve upon.
Hey, Troy, just let one off of that. I remember one of your attributes. God, I remember sitting up in the press box with Norv, and I was convinced it was going to be a sack. A guy would be bearing down on you, and somehow you make a miraculous throw on the money, and we make a first down or score a touchdown, whatever, and he got hit. And it was hit back in those days. Quarterbacks really got hit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no.
And nowadays, the way these quarterbacks are protected, do you think there's a little bit of that? Do you think Caleb could help himself by sitting in there longer?
I think there's a tendency for a lot of quarterbacks to think so much about just avoiding the sack, avoiding the negative play. I do think that part of it is and this, again, is not just Caleb. It's across the league what I see. And it's one of the reasons why last Monday night when I called the Bengals-Cowboys game, you know, Joe Burrow, he may not be the best quarterback in the league, but he's my favorite quarterback in the league. And he throws with anticipation better than anybody in the game. And so these quarterbacks come into the league today. They want to see receivers come out of their breaks. They're a little methodical in the pocket, so everything's kind of slowed down. It puts offensive linemen, which everyone will tell you, it's hard to develop offensive linemen. They're just simply not coming into the NFL. So now you take a position that's not being developed in college, the offensive line, and you put a quarterback behind him who's got this false sense of timing and is hanging on to the football, and they're taking a lot of sacks, which is essentially killing drives. The drives are over for the most part. When you take one of these sacks, I think the way that you speed a quarterback up, and I say this from experience because, you know, you mentioned North Turner, and when he came to Dallas, from day one until the last practice that he coached me 3 years later, every day he said, you know, get out of there, meaning get the ball from the center and drop back as quickly as you can. And we didn't run shotgun. And so I believe when you watch the 49ers or you watch the Green Bay Packers or even the Minnesota Vikings this week, they all come from this Mike Shanahan tree. And with that, there's a lot of under center. And then that tends to speed up the quarterback and it speeds up the timing. So the ball's coming out as opposed to just standing back there in shotgun, because it's hard to develop a timing from the shotgun formation, and quarterbacks are sitting back there just holding on to it as if there's not a pass rush. And I just don't think it's winning football. And that's why I'm really bullish on that offensive system from the Mike Shanahan tree that we see across the league with a number of offenses that are having a great deal of success.
Troy, now that the Bears coaching job is available, do you think it matters if the head coach is offensive or defensive?
Well, I've been called, I will tell you this, I've been called by owners, I've been called by general managers over the years, and I've been asked that very question, because usually I have a few candidates that I like to, if I'm asked about a potential coach or what I think of somebody, and in a perfect world, I would tell you that I would want an offensive coach as the head coach who also calls plays. And, you know, nothing against, you know, Coach Wonstead and the defense and all the things that go into that. But I do believe the hardest position on a staff is the offensive coordinator. It's rare when a defense gives up a play. It's rare that the defensive coordinator is under the scrutiny that an offensive coordinator is whenever they don't score down at the goal line or whenever they don't move the football or they don't convert on a third down. I mean, it's just endless. Every armchair quarterback has an opinion on what the offensive coordinator should have done, and it's always after the fact. But it's hard to find those offensive minds. If you're a defensive head coach, and I talked to Bill Belichick about this years ago, and if you have a good coordinator offensively and then he gets a head job, which if he's really good, that's what's going to happen. You've got to have someone else in the pipeline who can step in and really coordinate that offense. And it's not easy to do. So in a perfect world, I'd say, yes, I want an offensive guy who also calls the plays, knowing that's not an easy job. But then with the caveat of when it's all said and done, whoever the head coach is, he has to be the head coach. I mean, first and foremost, every team, I don't care who it is, how good of a year they've had, they're going to hit a time in the season to where, you know, it's you're questioned a little bit and there's a bump in the road and the season can go one way or another. And you need a head coach who can command the room in an environment when players are maybe a little reluctant to listen. And so first and foremost, I want a head coach who can command the room. Secondly, I would prefer that be an offensive guy.
Well, Troy, I can verify what you're saying as much as obviously I would, you know, the defensive side. When I was right here at the Bears, I've told the story, and we win, we go to the playoffs, and Ron Turner, Norris' brother, was my coordinator, and he gets the Illinois job. So I end up hiring Matt Cavanaugh at the Dolphins after 2 years. Chan Gailey leaves and goes to college. He was my coordinator. Remember, Norv comes down with me at Miami.
Yeah.
2 years, we win 10 games or so. and he gets the Raider job. In 5 years, I was on my third coordinator there. So, I mean,
it's hard.
It is hard.
Hey, Troy, we love hanging out with Dave Wannstedt every week. And one thing that we've learned is that he's fun to work with. And I always think about all these teams that, you know, always wanted Wanny. And him and Jimmy and, like, all those guys and Butch Davis and Tony Wise and, like, all the guys who were all together, as that culture was being built and happening in Dallas, was it fun? And did that matter? Because it seems like Dave is a lot of fun and probably was a lot of fun to be on a team with, too.
Well, I will tell you this because, Dave's become a real close friend of mine. Jimmy has, Norv. You know, a lot of those guys on that staff, when they first came in, I was a young rookie and, they were trying to build a program.
We were trying not to get fired. Go ahead, Troy. Sorry.
Right. So, I think that for us as players, we certainly didn't we didn't see the fun side of it until we started to win. And, I think that Jimmy, my guess is Dave would tell you that when they were away from the players, they would find their moments to be able to enjoy themselves because being around them, that's who they are. But the thing that we had, and I'm sure Dave's talked about it on this show over the years, I just think that what I knew then and what I even know more now is everyone on that staff was loyal to the head coach because what happens invariably is you get into your position meetings and players like to bitch. And so they're complaining about this or that. And all of the position coaches that Jimmy brought in with him to Dallas, they were all loyal to Jimmy. So whenever players would complain and say, well, I'm not being used right or this and that, the coaches always backed the staff and what Jimmy was doing or whatever the decisions were made. And that's important. And it's rare because coaches generally, the position coaches, they want to get along with their players. So when they get off with them, the wide receiver room, the coaches become part of that room with their players and be friends with them. And it just causes some problems. So I think that for us, there just was no chinks in the armor when it came to how we were going to do things, what was expected, what Jimmy demanded. It was from top to bottom, and the message was sent loud and clear.
Yeah, you know what? I got to say this. These guys have all seen the picture on Jimmy's boat. You know, Troy's the only player that really is in with the inner circle. Jimmy and Norv and myself, obviously Jimmy's guys.
Yeah.
And we would do this stuff. And then, but as far as players, not except Troy.
Is that a quarterback's right? And that, Troy, is that how that works?
I would say this, Jimmy's last couple years, it started after we won our first Super Bowl in 92. And then that year, Jimmy and I went through some tough times and we went through periods where we didn't speak and the thought that we would become as close as we are and that I would present him in the Hall of Fame. I mean, nobody would have bet on that, but the 93 season, then we continued to win. Everyone's getting along when you're winning. And then when I retired, Jimmy retired about the same time. We both went to work at Fox at the same time. And that's really when Jimmy and I became really, really close. I have tremendous respect for him, and I consider him one of my closest friends. And then I love being around with Dave and Tony Wise and Norv and Butch Davis and all these guys, and just hearing the stories because they go way back before me. I've known Jimmy since I was, I believe, 14 years old as a sophomore in high school. I went to his football camp at Oklahoma State, and all those guys were there then, at Oklahoma State. But now that I'm older and I'm one of their peers and we're able to just hang out and visit, I love hearing all the stories from behind the scenes, some of which I wasn't even a part of. But to go back to your earlier point, nobody's lacking having any fun when they get together. I'll promise you that.
Hey Troy, now I'm gonna bring one thing up. So he said it was at Jimmy's camp, right, when he was 14. I was recruiting a running back out of Bristow, Oklahoma.
That's right.
Charles Crawford.
Charles Crawford.
And I was battling Oklahoma to get this kid signed. So I take Tony Wise with me. He never signed anybody, Tony. He was always the guy that was
wow.
He could always drive and so they're playing Henrietta High School, where Troy Aikman went to high school. And we and Tony and I go to the Bristow game, and Tony's got him a big box of popcorn. You guys can, you know, these guys all know Tony. When Tony comes to Chicago, he always comes on the show, so these guys all know him. Tony had him a big box of popcorn, and he's got him a Coke here, and he's digging into it, and he looks, and he says, "Wow, look at that big kid on Henrietta's team. Who was that?" And I said, "Are you kidding me? That's Troy Aikman. He's a ninth grader. He had a big handful of popcorn. He says, man, look at that big guy out there on Henrietta's team." Oh, yeah. True story.
Troy, yeah. All of us that are watching Caleb Williams, and we see him now inside of this losing streak, and even looking at him, like, you feel bad. You went through real tough times at the beginning of this thing in your career. How did you not lose faith?
Well, that's the biggest part of it. You know, my rookie year, I was 0-11, and there were, you know, the one game we won, I wasn't even the starter, didn't even play in the game. Steve Walsh was the quarterback. And, you know, I walked away from a lot of games knowing I didn't play very well, but there were some games I walked away from that rookie season to where I thought I played well enough for us to win. And we were in a position to win and only to at the end of the game lose. And I just remember walking off the field so many times and going, man, what does it take to win a game in this league? And fortunately for me, we won our very first game of the season my second year. So at least I didn't have to carry that around any longer. But, you know, the thing for him is I had Jerry Rome, and he was my quarterback coach, and he just refused to let me lose confidence in myself. He just continually, you know, built me up and made me feel like it wasn't all on my shoulders and that better days were ahead. And so when I'm asked, should a rookie quarterback play right away or should he watch? There's examples of both that have worked. So I don't think there's a hard and fast rule, but the most important part of it is if a staff feels that the guy is losing his confidence, I think you've got to get him out of there. And we've seen what happened in Carolina with Bryce Young, you know, when he wasn't a rookie. He's not a rookie this year, but when they put him down and then he's come back and he's played better. Sometimes that helps. But the difficult thing in Chicago, I think, is we've seen this before, that we saw with Mitch Trubisky. His coach gets fired after his first year. They bring in a guy who didn't pick Mitch Trubisky. We saw it with Justin Fields, and now we're seeing it with Caleb Williams. And there's just been a tremendous amount of turnover. It's not easy. For those that say, you know, gosh, you just hate to see all this change, I get it. And you do hate to see all that change. But if the change is good and they bring in people who can develop a quarterback and who can coordinate an offense and put him in a position to be successful, like what I had my third year when Norv Turner came in, then the change is good and better days are ahead for him. I just think he's too talented. I think I still think that team has potential to be a good football team. And we all know, I mean, it sounds cliche, but I do believe that when the Chicago Bears are good, the NFL is a better league. They're just one of those flagship franchises. And I want to see them. I want to see them be good for the fans and for the organization.
Hey, Troy, this has been awesome. We appreciate your time very much. And, we will definitely talk down the road here. But thank you for coming on. We all appreciate
it. Thank you, Coach. Always a pleasure.
All right, buddy.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Troy.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
It's Troy Aikman. Right
that was there. Delightful.
That was delightful. And that stuff early
thanks,
on.
Thanks, Coach. We appreciate you man. For that.
Yeah, what jumped out at you?
Let's talk about it when we come back. We'll take a break and we'll check in about it. Dave Wanstead's the best. It's Spiegel and Holmes on the Score.
Dave Wanstead.
And I'm always available unless I'm doing something.
With Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
I believe when you watch the 49ers or you watch the Green Bay Packers or even the Minnesota Vikings this week, they all come from this Mike Shanahan tree. And with that, there's a lot of under center. And then that tends to speed up the quarterback and it speeds up the timing so the ball's coming out, as opposed to just standing back there in shotgun, because it's hard to develop a timing from the shotgun formation, and quarterbacks are sitting back there just holding on to it as if there's not a pass rush, and I just don't think it's winning football.
It's great stuff from Troy Aikman, a perspective that was desperately needed in our conversations about Caleb Williams. Thanks, Coach, for getting Troy to be here on the show during your segment.
It was
awesome.
Man, it was scary stuff about the way Caleb holds on to the ball from Troy's perspective at the beginning.
Yeah, he was talking about the sacks. And, you know, what he's talking about for our listeners, the pass routes are tied in. When you're under center, the pass routes that the receivers are running or the tight end or running backs, they're tied in with when they're coming out of their break, if you can picture that, the quarterback hits his third step. So if it's a three-step drop, the quarterback takes a snap, it's 1, 2, 3, and by the time his back foot hits that third step, you're coming out of your break, whether it's an out, curl, takeoff, doesn't matter the route. But you're turning your – you're coming out. And so the quarterback is getting the ball out. That's what he was talking about with timing. If it's a curl, an 8-10-yard curl, it's going to be off a five-step drop. So by the time it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, bang, he plants, the ball's coming out. So that's the point that he was trying to make, that the timing of it, in his opinion, when you're under center, and that's why you see what teams, the Vikings, the Packers, the 49ers, the Rams.
But when you're in the shotgun, you're just waiting and trying to count, whereas if you're under center, you're just counting your steps, and it's easier.
In his mind, it's easier.
Makes all the sense in the world.
In his mind is easy, absolutely.
Coach, you got some football picks for us?
I do. I got picks right here.
Can I talk football here for a minute?
It's time for the Four Winds Forecast with Dave Wonstead.
Put your mouthpiece in, because here we go.
Presented by Four Winds Casino in New Buffalo and South Bend.
All right, here we go. I'm taking Arizona, okay? They got to come up with a win. I'm taking Arizona. I hate to say this, Bear fans, but I am taking the Vikings to win this week, and the Bears are getting 6.5. I'm taking the Jim Harbaughs, okay? 2.5 points. But I do like the Chargers over Tampa Bay. And my big, big upset is I'm taking the Miami Dolphins this week to, pull a big upset. They're getting 3 points.
That was the Four Winds Forecast every week with Dave Wonstead. Experience the excitement at Four Winds Casino, New Buffalo, and South Bend. With award-winning cuisine, the latest slots, a variety of table games, and luxurious hotels. Four Winds Casino, your entertainment escape.
Not only did you get the treat of Troy Aikman being on the segment, not only did you get the treat of our guy Wani being here, not only did you get the treat of his picks, but we are also going to hook you up if you are caller 6 to the Scores Contest line. 312-540-0670. We're going to give you a $200 gift card to Four Winds Casino and Resort in New Buffalo and South Bend, your entertainment escape.
Coach, you're the best. Have a great day, all right?
Oh, that's it. What are you guys going to talk? I'm gone?
Our show's pretty much over, Coach.
Kind of toast here, Coach.
Yeah. All right.
We lost
Very you. Good. Sounds good. I'm out of here, I guess. Okay. I don't know.
Didn't mean to bother you.
Coach is up out of here. We need to take a break.
We just dismissed him. It's true.
It's true. Back after this on the Score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
It is on like radar charm.
With a fleet of super bads and status radar charm.
Afternoons on the Score.
I like this kind of party. I like this kind of party, baby.
We're having a holiday party tomorrow. That's right. It's going to be catered. There's going to be beverages. The great John Vincent is going to be here singing some of your favorite holiday songs. And there's going to be a very special gift for you, the dedicated Score listener, at 5:30 p.m. on Spiegel and Holmes. And if you'd like to participate in our holiday party tomorrow, you can. Head over to the Odyssey app and click Send a Voice Message next to the Listen Live button on the app. And you can contribute a grievance that you've had with your favorite Chicago sports team or athlete this season. Lord knows you've got options. So click Send a Voice Message next to the Listen Live button, and we will play the best ones on tomorrow's show, our Spiegel and Holmes holiday party.
Think of it as like Festivus. You get your opportunity. You can contribute a grievance to us. And as Spieg said, if you're using the Odyssey app, click Send a Voice Message. It's next to the Listen Live button. We want as many great messages as we can so we can make a good choice and we can share tomorrow's show with your grievances.
And we get to hang out and have a little party with you, the listeners, man.
And I get a hug from John Vincent.
Oh, top notch.
He's a good man.
He's lost some weight, though. He's lost a little girth on that hug.
He's still, 6 or whatever.
Yeah, he's an enormous man, and I'm sure still a phenomenal hugger, but, you know.
And he's the reason, but him being a big guy wasn't why he was a phenomenal hugger.
True.
The reason that John is a phenomenal hugger is because he genuinely cares about people.
Oh.
And he's happy to see you.
I think it's true, but I've always thought of him and Adam Amin like the two best huggers on right now the Chicago Hug depth chart.
Right.
They're kind of like the Sonic and Knuckles of the hugging scene, if you will. The thunder and lightning.
I agree with that.
You know what I mean? So.
That's a wrap.
Strangely enough, Amin is the thunder. You don't want to mess with that man.
No, you do not. He will destroy you with a hug. He might be a stronger hugger than Vincent. Vincent is loving. He's a very. I'll be reminded tomorrow.
Now, Adam is also. He loves you, so he's gonna hug you. He's gonna talk to you. He's gonna say, make sure you're okay. They're two good men, and that's really what's going on there. We could all learn from them, to tell you the truth.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm looking forward to John Vincent singing tomorrow. That'll be delightful. And there's food coming in. Was it Ina Mays? Ina Mays is coming in tomorrow?
Yes, sir.
Come on.
We are going to be treated since we didn't get to be a part of the Score Christmas party.
Yeah, whatever.
Shane is put together one of our own.
That's right.
And I love it.
We didn't get to ice skate for 10 minutes.
That's all they got. That's all they have.
Whatever.
Great stuff from you guys today. Shout out to Dave Wanstead for bringing Troy Aikman onto the show. That was legendary. Thanks to Mark Griffin.